Hello, welcome to the Black Autonomy Podcast. My name is Jonina Irvin. As a follow-up to our last episode on Vote for Me and I'll Set You Free, the Futility of U.S. Elections, today we're going to be dealing with the topic of dual power. In other words, if we have futility in the U.S. elections in this country and the need for direct democracy, how do we begin to achieve that? That's what we'll be discussing in this episode. With me to discuss that is Lorenzo Comboa Irvin. Lorenzo and I both are co-founders of the Black Autonomy Federation. This podcast is produced by the Black Autonomy Federation. And Lorenzo is also one of the founders of the original Black anarchist movement in the United States. So Lorenzo, looking back and moving forward, we want to talk about how we begin to create dual power. We said that the U.S. electoral system in this country has failed people, poor and working class people. So how do we begin to move forward to establish dual power? And what is dual power?
Well, first of all, we need to understand some things that when we talked about the criticism of the United States government and its electoral process, because that's what we're talking about, we have to also be talking about alternatives to it, but not just alternatives to the electoral portion of the government. We have to talk about a program to totally replace the government and the capitalist system. Ultimately, that's what we have to be talking about. And it has to be a transitional program. So we're not just saying, here's a documentary or so forth, declaration or so forth, method of explaining it. We need a method. We need a movement. As we were talking about last time, the movement itself, we were talking about it in terms of the electoral system. This time, we're going to talk about it in terms of building an alternative infrastructure on the one hand, and on the other hand, going past the stages of what we're calling insurrectionary politics. When I say insurrectionary, I'm not just talking about armed self-defense or armed struggle, but talking about a means of opposition to the government. We want to go past the stage of just legal or so-called illegal protests to be able to then talk about transforming the economy and the political system and creating something totally new. But before we can get to that, we need to understand that this is all a transitional phase. We have to, first of all, realize that we have to start in our local communities. Once again, you know, we have to start on the lowest level, a lowest form of organization, and build from there. Somebody said, well, how do you do this and how do you do that? Well, you do it by organizing on the lowest level. We create revolution on the lowest level. So if we just said to ourselves, how would we be able to build a revolutionary movement in this country? One is to be able to challenge the state at every turn. And certainly when we were talking about direct democracy, that would be a method of challenging the electoral system on the one hand. And on the other hand, to bring about a new consciousness among masses of people that this thing is a fraud. It has never been created. It was never created to support the rights of Black people and poor people, in fact, in this country, since the first people who were able to vote were whites that owned land. That was the only way you could get a chance to vote. And then, of course, if you were a slave or if you were a native, you still had no right to vote at all, and you had no other rights as a citizen or any of that. So it was only up to 1964 that Blacks got the right to vote. We talked about that. So now we talk about how to implement programs that will allow us to create this new society, because just not voting or creating a protest movement alone, it'll change society, but it won't change society in the sense of a revolutionary change, which is a total transformation. So we talk about dual power. We'll talk about it, one, in the sense that most activists understand it in terms of a cultural and political movement, which can challenge the state, which can, over the course of time, build up the mass movement itself into where it can derail the government. But it's a transitional program. It's not designed to overthrow the state in its own self. It's not a liberatory program in and of itself. So dual power, there are as many definitions as there are for direct democracy. Some people think direct democracy means voting by a mass national referendum process. And some people think it means removing politicians locally and so forth and so on, but leaving the system itself intact. So there's all kinds of ideas about direct democracy, and the same can be said for dual power. But what we're talking about is the kind of situation where, as an oppressed people, we have to create a political alternative to allow us to go to the stage past political power under this system. We're not seeking to just create autonomy on a scale where we preserve the rights of the ruling class. And many people begin these programs and projects, and they call them revolutionary or whatever they call them, without having an understanding of that. Whatever you do has to be in opposition to those in power, and it has to empower those who are on the bottom. So that's the first simple thing to understand. But also, it's a form of radical oppositional movement that creates alternative, autonomous institutions, economic, social, and political. And it's a way to take the condition of oppressed people, poor people, that the government does not serve and that the government doesn't intend to serve, and you create an alternative public sector that can feed people, give them housing, jobs, decent health care, and so forth. You can bring them into a new form of the economy and a new form of political structure. Some people in some countries have created and called it a solidarity economy. Well, we may be talking about that, but we may be going further than that and have the ability to do that based on our specific situation in the United States. And we need to understand that one of the first examples of this that we know of was the Black Panther Party's survival programs. And we have an expert, fortunately, with us who's able to talk about this at length.
Well, I was in the Black Panther Party for many years and had a chance to, you know, see these survival programs in operation. This, as Lorenzo was saying, the Black Panther Party survival programs were, in fact, an example of an effort, a successful effort, while it lasted, to create dual power in the United States. The Black Panther Party had a school, Oakland Community School. It had a free food program. One of its most respected survival programs was a free breakfast for children, which was overall a response to hunger and poverty in the country, particularly among poor Black low-income people. We had free medical clinics in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We had a free ambulance program, free pest control, free shoes. We had a free busing to prisons program, a legal aid program to help people get attorneys who needed them. And we also had a program that was called the SAFE program, Seniors Against a Fearful Environment, in which we provided free transportation and an escort service when senior citizens needed to get out and take care of their errands, their business. They were often being attacked. So this was a form of protection for them. The first Black Panther Party survival program was actually created in 1968, the breakfast program. And some people criticized the Black Panther Party survival programs, saying that they were reformist programs. And Bobby Seale, the co-founder of the Black Panther Party, said, "These are not reform programs. They're actually revolutionary community programs. A revolutionary program is one step forward by revolutionaries, by those who want to change the system to a better system. A reform program is set up by the existing exploitative system, an appeasing handout to fool the people and keep them quiet." That's what Bobby Seale said about the survival programs.
Groceries, way over 6,000 bags of groceries being given away free. Tomorrow night, the Black Panther Party has organized the whole conference, and tomorrow night at the Oakland Auditorium, that's Wednesday tomorrow night at 6 p.m., we expect way over 6,000 people to come down and get their free bags of groceries and also to register to vote. To unify the vote around the very concrete program so that in the future, the Black community and other poor oppressed people in any kind of vote will be unified around concrete survival programs like this so that the people won't be axed by the politicians to endorse them, but the politicians will have to endorse people's community survival program, such as free food because people got to eat every day.
This is a new approach for the Black Panther Party, isn't it?
It's not per se a new approach. It's some new kind of work. It's all related to our original vision, though, of the Black Panther Party over 6 years ago. And the Black Panther Party organizing this kind of operation really shows that we're implementing the original vision of the Black Panther Party.
The other Black Panther Party co-founder, Huey P. Newton, said we call these programs survival pending revolution. They were designed to help the people survive until their consciousness is raised, which is only the first step in the revolution to produce a new America. In themselves, they do not change social conditions, but they are life-saving vehicles until conditions change. And that's what Huey Newton said about the survival programs.
My name is Khalida Smith. I'm 8 and a half years old. I live in Oakland, California.
Oh, we can do it too. Put your neck, put your neck. We can do it too.
I go to school at the Oakland Community Learning Center. My school was started by the Black Panther Party.
And when you look at the free breakfast program for children, in which free hot breakfast was served to school children during the regular school year, this was a program that the Black Panther Party created for a number of reasons. We saw on a practical level that kids were not able to go to school and learn anything if they were hungry. That's impossible. No one can, in fact, do that.
Everything was a problem. For an example, they used to serve cookies and I think graham crackers and milk in the morning to children in primary school who had the money to pay for it. And if you didn't have the money to pay for it, you had to put your head on the desk until the other kids finished eating. I always thought that was very bad, but at the Oakland Community School, everybody eats.
My school serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner because sometimes your mother or father or whoever you're living with probably don't have enough food for you. Some of the people who serve food are teachers.
And we also saw that this was a way, as we put it, to raise the consciousness of the people about hunger and poverty in the United States. And ultimately, this breakfast program forced the federal government to expand their free lunch program to a bigger breakfast program, because they certainly did not want the Black Panther Party to get credit for feeding hungry kids, which we did. A lot of people supported this program strongly. So this was a program that really educated people about hunger and poverty in the United States. And, you know, it got the attention of the FBI as part of their counterintelligence program, in which they said that the breakfast program was, in fact, what they called the single most dangerous program of the Black Panther Party. It was feeding hungry kids, but it was dangerous, according to them, because it was feeding people. Because when you feed people, that's a basic human need. And then another organization that for a while dealt with the whole concept of dual power was an organization that started around the time the Black Panther Party did, was called the National Welfare Rights Organization. And what they did was they sought to assist people who were on public assistance between the time of 1966, 1975. And most of these people at that time were low-income women of color. And so the National Welfare Rights Organization educated welfare recipients about their rights, told them what they were entitled to, told them how to get it. And they also exposed the racist treatment of Black women within the public assistance program. Black women got one thing, not very much. White women got other things. So these are just two examples in fairly recent American history of attempts and successful attempts for as long as they lasted to create dual power in the United States. So those are things we can look to as lessons and the fact that this can be done. Of course, our situation right now, the social and political economic crisis we are in right now, is far worse now than it was back in the late 60s and early 70s when the Black Panther Party was at its height and the National Welfare Rights Movement. So, Lorenzo, we know we need an oppositional movement in order to create dual power. We have to begin to build this movement. What is involved in this transitional approach, as you call it? How do we begin to take the first steps to have a revolutionary reconstruction of society?
Well, without a struggle movement and without understanding or making the mass of people understand what they have to fight and place it within terms that they actually understand rather than academic jargon, it means that we will be able to create a movement like a mass movement, like the 1960s, but base it on material conditions and the conditions, economic and otherwise, that exist right now. Because we're at an economic stage right now where we're talking about millions of people who were poor. Even before the virus came along, there were 50 million people already in poverty. And now we're talking about millions more because the economy is collapsing. And so some of the things that we've seen in this period are campaigns to object to the Democratic Party, for instance. You would think that the worst ruling class party would be the Republicans or whatever, but it's the Democratic Party that's always done us in and prevented us from achieving any goals as an independent entity. So what we want to do, obviously, like I said, we want to be able to create a mass movement which puts all power into the hands of the people. But that movement also has to be one that creates alternatives. This is key to understand that we cannot get free riding a Pharaoh's chariot. No, we can't. We can't get free that way. We have to create alternatives in the community. Those are the first steps. Just like the party came into existence and started organizing in the local areas. And, you know, with the Civil Rights Movement, SNCC and some of these other Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, they also came into power or came into existence as struggle organizations. At this stage, what the state has been able to do is to make us feel that we don't have to fight and struggle anymore independently, but that we can just depend on Black politicians, of which there are a lot of them now, and others waiting in the wings, Black or other politicians of color, and we should follow this approach. And this has been going on for quite some time to try to prevent autonomous organizations from building a base and then being able to fight. But programs to feed people and programs to take care of children, if you really think about this, in this period right now, what has arisen is a mutual aid movement in cities all over the country where people are tending to the needs of poor people. They are feeding homeless people. They are feeding elderly people who are trapped in their homes and so forth, or sick people for that matter. And so they're providing the resources to people in a way that probably wouldn't have happened 6 months ago or a year ago. People couldn't see this coming. But one of the things that's happening as a result of it is that new movements are being built right now. Now, the question is, can we go beyond these movements, you know, which have a limited agenda? They're not necessarily revolutionary movements. Can we go beyond them and build a dual power revolutionary movement, a movement that's in opposition to the government, but at the same time is building alternative infrastructure and institutions and putting those institutions in the hands of the people and having them replicate each other's work and having them build on each institution is built at one stage or another. For instance, I mean, if something is started in Chicago or whatever, and people hear about it somewhere else, well, they start building it in their areas. And that's essentially what's happening right now with this mutual aid movement. But it's not a Black-led movement. It's not a movement, at this point at least, where there are out front political goals that people understand. And it's not a situation where they see that they have the potential to overturn and transform society. Even the Black Panther Party's programs could have gone much further and been much harder than they actually were. But, you know, you're dealing with a timeline, you're dealing with historical forms of oppression and police terrorism and so forth that prevented them from reaching their goals. But the fact is that they had come up with it, and even though it was misunderstood at the time and everything and all of that, the fact is that the people didn't misunderstand it. Maybe other activists did, you know, maybe some of the Black nationalist figures and so forth didn't understand it, but the people understood exactly what it was, And the people understood it as a survival program. They may not have been able to recite to you chapter and verse about what the leadership had said or what one historical figure or another had said, but they understood what these programs were designed to do. And we need to do this now. We need to be able to take political education right now. One, it's been asked, what should we do right now? Well, we should, especially Black activists, should start building programs like our own mutual aid groups like right now to feed people, to give people, to whatever extent they, we have the capacity to give people jobs or whatever. But we should start massive political education. And that's the one thing that in this period we need to do. And I'll tell you why. During the time that the Black Panther Party was being destroyed by the counterintelligence program, one of the things that was stated out front as a goal was to destroy the political education that had been created by the party's newspaper, that Joe Hannah used to be one of the editors of, because the newspaper was able to take complicated political theories and break it down for the people to understand what was happening to them and what all this meant. And we need to have an ability to reach large numbers of people and politically educate them as to their plight, which they know well, but also why they're in this situation, why we're in this situation, and what we can do about it. Because there's a great deal of cynicism. They've heard all these politicians for years come up and promise them the sky and the moon and so forth. And so you come along, and you don't even have the kind of resources that they've got. And, you know, they hear this stuff from you, but you have to point out that it's them who are making the changes. We are just bringing them the program. That's all we're doing is bringing them the program. We're not trying to lord it over them or any of this. So we try to make these things, whether it's dual power or whatever, not a complicated affair for people to understand. We're trying to create conditions so that the masses of people can build their own organization or to take over the organizations that have been created and use those organizations to then push towards transforming the whole of society. Now, it's the people. I always say this, you know, people understand it. Some people think I'm crazy for saying it, but it's the people that are the revolution. It isn't the so-called revolutionaries or organizations. It's the people which is the revolution, because the people either demanding change or making the change or fighting a war for change or whatever form it takes to get it, they will fight like hell to get it if you can break it down and make them understand that it's in their interest to do so, or if they understand it on their own. Whichever, let's not assume that we're the only ones that know anything. It just has to be a thing that is real and realistic as a set of goals and as a set of programs that affect their life. That is really what the survival programs did, is it made it real to people. You know, you can talk to people all day long, but you stick, if you say, well, we're giving you some food, we're giving you a bag of groceries, but you got to sit here and listen to us speak for about 20 minutes or whatever. That is more real than anything they hear in their daily existence. So in talking about dual power, all we're saying is we're going to create an alternative to the programs of the government. And especially we're talking about creating a autonomous or independent public sector that can take over the areas or start doing the work that the government itself is not doing for the people. That's what created the conditions for the original survival programs for the Black Panther Party, and they could do it today. You think about how many people are homeless and poor, and how many people don't have jobs, and what the effect of the economy is, and now they're going to throw out, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people at the first of the year, going to throw them out in the streets. We need a program that can capitalize on this, and that can win people over to the idea that they can resist. You know, people will resist and fight, but it has to be a realistic prospect of victory, if one, and it has to be something that they can understand and get behind. Most organizers in this period make the mistake of thinking that if they come up with a program, the people are going to come running. That's not how it works. You have to be a revolutionary community organizer. We need revolutionary community organizers to make any of this stuff real. Dual power. Okay, we can get dual power if we get the masses of people behind us. And we can sustain dual power and make it into a program, ultimately, that links up with other people in other cities and so forth and so on, that can totally overthrow this economy.
But I think the main thing that we have to remember is that there will not be any type of grand pronouncement from mm-hmm. a group or a conference, we hereby create or we hereby establish dual power. This is something is that I think that you were talking about in the beginning of this episode, that people have to begin to make this real on the local level.
Yeah.
And we're in Kansas City. What may be something that may work in Kansas City may not be what people will choose to do in Chicago or Atlanta or mm-hmm. St. Louis, for that matter, because you have to look at the concrete conditions, the movements that arose back in the 60s. In fact, the Black Panther Party itself arose out of some of the concrete social, economic, and political conditions mm-hmm. of the time. They didn't just happen on their own. They arose out of real conditions, so that creating dual power is something that people will have to begin to craft on their own local level as they begin to understand and see the issues that they need to deal with in their own area. So when we say transitional, we don't necessarily mean that you sit back and wait for someone to come into your town and say, we hereby establish dual power.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. People will have to build it from the grassroots up.
Think about this. This country, for the last 15, 20 years, has had the largest prison population anywhere in the world, by far, any countries, any combination of countries or whatever. They've got the largest prison population by far of any country in the world. But there has never been a sustained mass movement or any kind of mass movement against the prison system like there's been against the police terrorism. Yet, just about every Black family or every other Black family or large numbers of Black families are affected by the prison system. They've got someone in prison, someone who's been in prison. Yet we have not been able to take what could be a popular issue, a popular movement, and even turn that into a campaign against the government. It's only the government that runs the prison system. It isn't Joe Blow down the street or something. It's the government that runs the prison system. So everything that's happening in terms of our community, the number of families without a full family, they've got numbers of people in prison. Sometimes, you know, there are more people in prison in some families than there are those out. But the point is, we could have been doing this fight long ago. And there are other issues like this. But because there isn't any revolutionary consciousness or organizing, the masses can't pick up on it, on the one hand, because the so-called organizers ain't picked up on it. On the other hand, we got to be able to create new ideas. If you keep coming out with the same hackneyed ideas, then you can't expect that there's going to be any kind of change. This is why the politicians and their others are united with the Democrats. This is why a considerable segment of the so-called left is allied with the Democrats. So whereas on the local level, we have to create the first campaigns. That's what the first campaigns have to be built. We don't know what form they're going to take precisely, but we do know that with the condition facing the communities as a whole, and getting worse, we know that it's possible to put something out there. It's possible to build something, but we have to understand that we can't do this ourselves. We have to link up with the masses of people. And by doing that, as a community, we can force the changes we see. That's what power is, actually, is to be able to force your political enemies or whatever to do what you want them to do because of your mass organization.
Well, dual power is certainly what we are seeking to achieve, but we're not under any illusions that it's going to be overnight and it's going to happen quickly, because these movements will have to be built. People will have to build them on the local level, from the grassroots, from the bottom up. But this is going to be key to bringing about the total transformation that we need to have in the United States, with a system that has certainly failed all working class, poor, low-income people, and in particular, Black people and people of color, because of the history of institutional racism in this country. So that's our discussion for this episode of the Black Autonomy Podcast. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking with you on our next episode. Thank you.